Podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
You know, I thought about starting this by trying to attempt some sort of Australian accent or whatever it is that Chris Pine is doing in, or Chris Hemsworth is doing in Furiosa. But I opted out of that because my Australian accent is not very good, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Most of my other accents are very strong and accurate, but Australia I can't quite nail. So I decided out of cultural sensitivity to steer clear.
Yeah, no. I appreciate the humility that you brought to this. Like it takes a lot to acknowledge your weaknesses and shortcomings. And if this is where we start, then I welcome it, you know?
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. you can't tell, but I'm doing a great impression of Anya Taylor-Joy's wide-eyed smolder. So.
And you can't tell, but I actually put soot all over my forehead. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Latest in the skincare.
Such a shame that the this is an audio-only podcast and we aren't, you know, sitting in lounge chairs recording clips for TikTok.
If only. But no, Furiosa, a Mad Max saga.
A Mad Max saga. Film. Yes.
Saga.
How many of the Mad Max movies, have you seen any of the Mad Max movies aside from Fury Road?
No. I thought we all thought they were bad. So I thought Fury Road was like, wow, this is actually art. Is that wrong?
I haven't seen them either. I wasn't sure if I assumed they were not relevant for this, and also I didn't watch them before. But I didn't. If you had watched them at some point, I wanted to give you the opportunity to discuss them and sort of like explain how they fit into this or if they fit into this at all. But you know what? We don't have to talk about Mel Gibson today.
Yeah, nobody cares. People are like, oh, it's the second Mad Max. Oh, blah blah. Like no one acknowledges that this was a franchise before.
I know. Whenever people were like, this was the fifth in the franchise or whatever, I was like, no. I don't think to anyone except for reality. Dudes born in the, you know, like 60s maybe. Because when did the originals even come out?
I'm pretty sure it was the 80s story. So it's not that old.
1979 was the original. Then Mad Max 2 came out in 1981. Then there was Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome in 1985, whatever that is, and then Fury Road, and then this is number five. Although apparently I'm now seeing that there's another movie called Mad Max The Wasteland that Tom Hardy is attached to that is coming at some point, apparently.
Well, yeah, no, he, the director, Miller, George Miller?
George Miller.
George R.R. Miller?
George R.R. Tolkien Miller the Third, I believe, is his full name.
He wrote Mad Max Fury Road, and while writing that, he was also writing Furiosa, and originally thought Charlize Theron would play it, and Charlize Theron used that script to kind of influence her choices in Fury Road, and then at the same time, they were building out a story for Mad Max sequels. So I imagine that's the Tom Hardy connection, is that they want to do that again. Yeah.
Because George Miller has written and directed all of the movies. So this is really
all
like his franchise.
Mad Maxes, yeah.
Yes, all two of the Mad Maxes and the three other
two
related movies that are non-canon.
Yeah, no, I am. Yeah.
There's also a video game,
like
apparently.
Baby. I think it was also like, it was supposed to, like, they were thinking of filming Furiosa and Fury Road, like, in the same, production. Yeah, sort of like Lord of the Rings. But then they were like, no, okay, let's just do one. And then when that was such a success, they immediately wanted to go into production for the Furiosa. But there was some drama with who would it be? Warner Brothers, where
yes.
George Miller had to sue them for like not paying or something. I did my research. I really did.
I'm like, did you? Because you appear to know nothing.
I was hoping that you would step up. I was hoping that you too did your research and we could have a more natural conversational flow. But I'll just Google it really fast.
In November 2017, Miller's production company filed a lawsuit against Warner Brothers over unpaid salaries, which delayed the production of any additional entries into the franchise.
Look at that.
In July 2019, Miller revealed that Furiosa was still being planned in addition to two Mad Max sequels. In March 2020, Miller resolved his legal dispute with the Warner Brothers and began casting the Furiosa prequel, which he intended to make after 3,000 Years of Longing, which is the Tilda Swinton Genie movie that came out during the pandemic.
Let's just acknowledge that you're reading off the Wikipedia page, okay? Well, I don't want people to think you actually did do the research in a way I didn't. You just sound more
well, but I have prepared. Seen 3,000 Years of Longing, so that's some research. I saw George Miller's last movie with Idris Elba,
Tilda Swinton. You're right.
Did you see that?
Really impressive. Not many people did, you know.
Exactly. I also watched The Queen's Gambit, so there's that.
I did see,
and I've seen Thor, at least one of them.
I've seen Bad Times at.
Oh, I also saw Bad Times at El Royale.
So I've done my research on what's
the worst Chris Hemsworth movie that we have seen? That's the real... I'm like, this is a game that we should be playing in movies, in episodes. What is the worst movie by this person that you have seen? Snow White and the Huntsman, I feel like, was bad. Oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
There's so many Thor movies and such to choose from. Bad Times at the El Royale, also bad. We did a whole episode on Men in Black International, which you may have forgotten existed.
Yeah, that was the worst one. That was it. That was the worst one for sure. Because even like Snow White, like there's at least some charm to him. But I feel like he was completely miscast for that movie or something wasn't clicking.
Did you know that he is in a movie called Spiderhead that came out last year?
Oh, yeah. Netflix.
Oh, is that a
Netflix? Yeah, it was good.
You watched it? I'm like, I've never heard of this.
It was good. I definitely talked to you about it. I talked to the podcast about it. I definitely put it on my year roundup. It's like he's running sort of a prison.
He's running like a drug prison.
Like they're experimenting on.
Drug prison?
Like he's experimenting on prisoners like who sign up for this special prison treatment where he's doing some sort of drug study.
That's helpful. On a separate note, I have seen every single movie and TV show and music video that Anya Taylor-Joy has ever appeared in for a BuzzFeed article that I wrote a couple of years ago. So
well-versed on her
filmography. What's her worst movie? Honestly, might be Barry, which is a movie, which is sort of like a Lifetime-y movie about Barack Obama in college, aka Barry, and she plays Barack Obama's college girlfriend.
Oh, wow.
If you can believe that movie,
but I don't remember her. Is she the most famous from that cast?
I'm like, who played Barack Obama in that movie?
I don't think anyone good.
Devin Terrell? Yeah, she appears to be the most famous person in that movie. That Netflix
that one
movie.
Doesn't get brought up on the press tour that much. I feel like more people should be honoring that.
She's also in Playmobil, the movie, which I think did. Oh, you know what? Actually, the worst movie that she was in was Radioactive, the Marie Curie biopic I think she's Marie Curie's sister.
If you had asked me how many things Anya Taylor-Joy has been in, I would have been like, oh, I think she's done like 5 movies. Like she's really selective.
She's in the New Mutants. That's just what I had in my mind. Never forget that. Remember the last night in Soho? She was in Amsterdam, which was terrible. Like she's not that selective, I think.
Popped up, yeah.
The Northman. Never forget.
Well, yeah, but
she voices Princess Peach in the Snow in Super Mario Brothers.
Okay, you know what,
she also has an 11 episode arc in Peaky Blinders in like the later seasons of Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, Oh, no,
she doesn't get to do much in that.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. You know, now that you list them, I'm like, oh, yeah, I've heard of these. But
so what we're really saying is that you and I have done a lot of research coming into this.
A lot of research. Yeah.
So much research. And just because we may have briefly forgotten a lawsuit between George Miller's production company and Warner Brothers does not mean that we did not really slave over this episode.
No. Yeah. And, you know, to be fair, the real story is that COVID hit and then they were delayed even more. And that's when it was sort of like, maybe Charlize won't be coming back. Let's cast for a new actress. They were doing their Zoom, you know, the classic acting Zoom audition. Yeah.
We've all done them.
Joy was like, if you cast me, I can move out of this lame apartment. And it was great for her. The saddest news is that they also had cast, what's his name? The proprietor.
Kevin Spacey. No. Jeffrey Epstein. And then he was murdered in his cell and couldn't come. Austin Butler.
Oh, that would have been good. Yeah.
Tom Hanks.
Yahya
Abdul-Mateen.
Yeah.
Was supposed to play the Tom Burke character, the driver guy who helps her.
Tom Burke who, you know, like that's how I felt about it.
It was,
he popped up and I was like, who is this guy?
Like, I know who he is. He's been in things, but Yahya Abdul-Mateen has a certain level of oh yes, this person could be a driver on the Fear Road. Like he has a grit to him where Tom Burke didn't. It wasn't really selling.
He was such a pretty
apocalyptic driver to me.
Yeah, no, it was
because he's kind of just cushy a little bit.
Yeah. He was too pretty, but also too unremarkable. You know what I mean? Like it was too soft, probably is what I'm looking for. Like there was just something about him that was so.
He's a little pudgy.
British. Yeah. Yeah.
For someone who's living in a post-apocalyptic wasteland, you need to either be bony, skinny, or kind of muscly.
Well, to be fair, he's one of the most important citizens of the Citadel, so maybe they have a better diet.
I guess so, but
you know, eating all those cabbages. So many cabbages.
So
just
many
nothing
cabbages.
But cabbages, honestly.
Yeah, well, they're working for the bullet farm guy or whatever because rubbing his nipples.
Yeah, see, look. Yeah. Okay, I have a lot of little questions. I have a lot of little things, but let's break it down. So Fury Road obviously is a Mad Max saga. Tom Hardy's Mad Max. Congrats. But the real star of the show is Charlize Theron. It's Furiosa.
She's got one arm. She's got no hair.
She's got one arm. Her title is Praetorian. Is that right? Praetorian?
No, Imperator.
Imperator. Okay. I don't
know. Imperator Furiosa.
She's the number one driver of this Citadel, which is the powerhouse, the I don't, whatever. The point of Fury Road is that it doesn't all matter. It's such a great action film and it's such a great, it's absolutely gorgeous, beautiful score. Every detail is immaculate. But it's also you're just thrown into this sort of day in the life of almost as things just go awry wildly. And it's really just getting from point A to point B in the most violent and stressful way possible. And it works wonderfully. You care about the characters.
Yeah, she's a driver who regularly is driving fuel and food and stuff back and forth between the Citadel and the Bullet Farm and the, what's the third place called? The Gas Town. And then one day she decides that she's going to help smuggle Immortan Joe's wives out of the Citadel and take them to this magical land full of women. And then when she steers off course, Immortan Joe and all of the other bad people chase her and the tanker down. And somehow or another, Tom Hardy is also in the car with her. I can't remember how he gets there exactly.
He's a blood bag.
Yeah, sure.
Nicholas blood bag.
And so then he gets involved and it's sort of Furiosa and Tom Hardy and the wives driving across the country with all of these horrible people chasing after them. And Yeah, that there's lots of different action sequences. There's a sandstorm. There's all kinds of stuff. Sandstorm.
Yeah, no, it was, it's...
But this is a prequel. So this is way before everything that happens in...
I mean, not way before if you really think about how it ends.
It starts with her as a kid. She starts as a child. Yeah, we go back to Furiosa's childhood. She's grown up with all of the women and then in the jungle area. And then somehow or another, these like terrible scavengers find this. And the women are like, we got to kill them. Well, actually, they kidnap Furiosa. But the women are like, we got to get back Furiosa and also kill these men so they don't lead everybody here to the jungle and take all of our food. And in the process of tracking down Furiosa on the motorcycle with the bad guys, Furiosa's mom, dies, and Furiosa loses track of exactly like where the jungle sort of was, and then lives with these terrible people.
Away. She's just stuck in the wasteland.
Yeah, she's kidnapped.
Yeah,
by Chris Hemsworth with a prosthetic nose. Chris Hemsworth watched Maestro and said, oh, I want one of those too, please.
I mean, yeah, but at least it wasn't anti-Semitic, you know.
We technically don't know whether or not Dementis is Jewish. Yeah, so it could be anti-Semitic.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's interesting because Fury Road was obviously such a huge hit. It like won 6 Academy Awards. Everyone has listed it on like best of decades, best of century, whatever. And it's beloved for the action, for the characters, for the world building. So there's a lot of attention on Furiosa and how it would hold up. I think I went into it with the right mindset. Because I was like, oh, they keep on highlighting that this is an odyssey. They literally use that in the trailer. It's her odyssey. And if you're like me and have actually read the odyssey.
Yes, I've read the odyssey. We've all read the odyssey. I've read it several times. Multiple translations, if you will.
Yes. It's always about like, it's less about the end goal and more about the journey. And there's just like everything goes wrong. There's all these side characters, side adventures, just so much that goes on. So yes. I knew it would be different than Fury Road, which was very precise and exacting in the limited story it wanted to tell, and it worked very well for that. It's been interesting like seeing feedback on this. Obviously, this movie is still like very well reviewed and critically received, but there's definitely like, that was different. There were choices made. Was that too slow? Was it too long? Why was Dementis so, you know, the focus of Furiosa's tale? Yeah. I'm curious how you felt.
I liked Fury Road. I feel like Fury Road is a movie that I saw it and I was kind of like, huh. And then over time, I've liked it more just because I think of all the things that it's doing, and the crafts and sort of like the boldness of it. It's not my favorite like genre of movie or necessarily something that I'm like, oh, I gotta keep watching that again. You know, it's like if you give me the option of watching Mad Max Fury Road or like Lady Bird, I'm gonna take Lady Bird every day. But I really liked Fury Road and I do like appreciate what it is. I wasn't necessarily clamoring for Furiosa and I feel like the trailers made it look a little cheapy, so I wasn't necessarily super excited to see it. But I do love Anya Taylor-Joy. I like Chris Hemsworth. He's my favorite of the Chrises. So I don't know. I feel like I was like cautiously optimistic. I think it was better than I thought it was going to be sort of as a movie. However, as a prequel, I sort of was annoyed by it in that I think – like the original's so well done and this walks you right up to kind of like the beginning of that. Like the end credits of Furiosa are like scenes from Fury Road. And I just kind of felt like the whole time you know exactly where the movie's going. And yes, there's like these side tangents and whatnot, but you kind of know exactly how it's like, exactly what's going to happen and how it's going to get there. And it doesn't really do too much to complicate that or turn things on its head. And I was thinking about like, because I feel like some people have been comparing this a little bit to like the John Wick series in like, oh, like it's expanding the world. You know, we're learning more about this very interesting scape and society, and that's sort of the interesting part of this movie, which I do think it is. And I would like to see more movies set in this universe. I think there's a lot you can do with it. But the John Wick movies are, for the most part, well, all so far, sequels. And so it's like building out in that way where you don't know what's going to happen. I think in order to make a really solid prequel, you have to, like, either the question of why has to be really interesting or how, like, there has to be something that is new and fresh and answers some sort of question. Like, I think about the Star Wars prequel trilogy, and it's like, okay, we have Darth Vader, we have this cute little boy. Like, how do we go from cute little boy to Darth Vader? Where I don't think the question of how do we get from Furiosa at the beginning of this movie to Imperator Furiosa, played by Charlize Theron, is that interesting. Or, like, there's not that much character development. She's sort of a badass at the beginning of the movie. Mm. She's a badass at the end of the movie. She's a badass for most of the middle of the movie. Like, Morton Joe is the bad guy at the beginning of this. He's the bad guy at the end of this. You sort of feel like the Chris Hemsworth character is not that important because you know he's not in Fury Road. So it's like well, he's probably going to die. I don't know. I sort of think that had they made these in the reverse order, had they made Furiosa first and then Fury Road, I would have liked Furiosa more. Or if I hadn't seen Fury Road and just saw Furiosa, I would have been very interested in it because it is well done and a lot of the action sequences are really good. I think I was just a smidge bored because I sort of knew where it was going the whole time and it didn't really surprise me that much. And then when you kind of know what's going to happen, it was a little long.
Yeah.
That was my take.
I can see that. I think it sort of is interesting to look at prequels, and they're not done often. But it is a delicate balance. I, for one, think that the towing the line right up to the day she freed the women was sort of like let the air out of it a little bit, because I don't know. I felt like there was room. I was torn about whether I wanted this to be its own franchise, like for another Furiosa chapter to come out, especially if it's pitched as an odyssey. I feel like that would have allowed for a lot of these side ventures. But since they ended up back at the Citadel so quickly and she moves up the ranks so quickly, it became obvious that wouldn't happen. But then by the end, when you're looped back into where Fury Road starts, you're sort of like, huh, well, that dot isn't as well connected as I would have liked. Like, her attachment to the wives specifically isn't really explored as interestingly as I think it could have been. Because, again, I think that is – and I think that speaks to maybe, like, why George Miller, who is, you know, an older male, is maybe – just lucking out in finding these really interesting female characters. But I think it's telling that both Charlize Theron and Anya Taylor-Joy have talked about like what they had to fight for to get the character where they wanted it to be. And both of them cited specifically these moments of rage where the character gets to like finally scream or shout. And that those were never in the script. And Charlize Theron like battled for it and was like, she has to have this release. She has to have this release. And that became one of the most iconic parts of Fury Road when she kneels down in the sand and just roars, like grieving for what's been lost. And then in this movie too, Anya Taylor-Joy is like, I want her to get a moment to scream. Like, female rage is so bottled up, but there has to be that release. Like, there's always going to be that crack. And he was like, blah, 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 blah. No, no, no. It's all about the eyes. And she's like, no. And she got the scream in there. And I think that's also an empowering moment. And so I think it's almost like this case where to him, the question of like, oh, well, why did she rescue these wives this time right now? Was less interesting to him. And I think that's true of Fury Road, where it's like, it's cool to have these sexy women in their like white clothes having to like figure things out as they go. And can they do it? And will they outsmart them? And can they be violent and gruesome too? Whereas I think it would have been more compelling to have that. Like when she ended up in the harem, I was like, oh, she's going to start having these relationships. Like she's going to start to like see the machinations of this hierarchy in this community, but it's over really fast. And so I think it was interesting that he wanted to present this like female character, but a lot of the choices still ended up being kind of, I don't know, dependent on these dudes around her without ever really questioning what that would feel like.
I mean, there wasn't that much character development in the first movie, but I feel like in some ways there's even less character development in this one. Like the Anya Taylor, Furiosa has so few lines in this movie. She barely talks at all. I mean, she's mute for the first half of the movie when she's played by the younger actress. And that goes on for a lot longer than I thought it was going to. You know, I feel like usually when you cast like a younger actress and then a famous person, it's like, okay, you got 10 minutes, the young person, and then we're switching over. But like Anya Taylor-Joy doesn't come in for like 45 minutes and out. Like it's a long time before you get her. And then even then she doesn't talk that much. She's mostly silent. The character who has the most dialogue is the Chris Hemsworth character. Like, he's talking all the time. You get a sense of, like, kind of who he is as a character. And I thought him, like, sort of his demise and kind of desperation and screwing himself over was one of the more interesting parts of the movie. Just because he has kind of like the most arc to it, where Furiosa sort of like a little bit kind of starts and ends in a similar place. And then like Immortan Joe, who is a character in Fury Road, and I thought we could get some more backstory there, is basically in the same place that he starts Fury Road at as he is at the beginning of this movie. And he's sort of, you never get the sense that he's in trouble or that something's going to happen to him. Like, he's always sort of riding on top of everything. And yeah, I just wish that there was a little bit more like arc or development or something going on character-wise for Furiosa, but also for, you know, some of the other people. Yeah, it's like, it's not like she has any relationships with the other women that would give her reasons for why she wants to smuggle people out. She's trying to get back home in this movie, but like, sort of not really. And also, you know, the whole time that she's not going to get home because she doesn't get home until the end of Fury Road. So it's sort of like, okay, well, that plot line kind of doesn't really matter as you're going through. You're like, oh, she's not going to leave.
I wanted it to be more personal. Like, obviously, the biggest like heart of the film is her relationship with the Praetorian Jack, I think is his name. And he's like the one, like, like, the thing is, I enjoyed watching this movie. I thought it was really fun action sequences. I think it was a touch too long, and some of the action bleeds into it. But, like, the first real chase scene with her hiding on the truck bed and the truck being attacked.
So good.
Amazing. Iconic. Obviously, so cool. But I do feel like I wanted it to be more personal and less, like, less set driven, because I think like the reason the love interest slash partnership or friendship or whatever was sort of like, doing here? Like,
so strange.
Cause it was like never really fully explored, and their time together is really fast, where she helps him out and she tries to leave and he's like, well, I can train you up and then you'll be ready to leave for real. And I was like, oh, okay. So we're going to get like a big time, you know, like training extended sequence. But no, she's just like good at her job, and he's like, okay, it's time for you to go. And she's like, oh, maybe you can come. I don't know. It was confusing. And so I kept waiting for there to be like skin in the game for why she would like, why she would rip off Immortan Joe's face in the sequel, which felt so personal and so like visceral. And I was like, okay, so he's gonna do something. Like, obviously he's a bad guy, but she only interacts with him once when she's like 10 years old. And she escapes from the harem really quickly. So like even the relationship with the, you know, princelings or whatever. I don't know. I just felt like there was like room to make it more interesting, like having her interact with these characters if we're going to bring them back. And instead, it's sort of like a dressing for this sort of romance angle.
Well, it's, but like not, because the romance with her and the, what's his name? Praetorian Jack, the Tom Burke character. It's like, they sort of just seem like friends, like colleagues. Yeah. And then there's one scene where they're kind of like, where all of a sudden they kiss and it's like, wait, what? Like,
they don't kiss.
Or
they touch foreheads.
Touch foreheads. Okay, whatever. It's like there's a moment where it's like, oh, wait, is this romantic? And then you're kind of like, I guess so. But then it kind of never comes back up again. So it's a weird, there's not a lot of like relationship dynamics going on there. And I think had this been something where it's like, oh, she's a posh princess who sort of like it lives in this utopia and doesn't really have that many skills, and she gets kidnapped, and then she sort of has to like learn to be this tough, grizzled fighter while she's in the pits and the driver, whatever. Like, then you could sort of see the arc of the movie. But the main arc of this is Chris Hemsworth. It's sort of like he's the one who finds her. He's the one who sort of like kind of takes care of her growing up, and then she gets back at him at the end. But and I guess that has like, you know, some payoff, but then that doesn't really connect at all to the second movie. Like, that plot line ends with this movie, and all of the stuff from the second movie like doesn't really connect in. And I wish that they had, I like, it almost feels like they just like wanted to do a bunch more action sequences and were sort of like, yeah, like the plot doesn't really matter that much, which is a really skeptical way of looking at this. And I think isn't really, doesn't pay attention to the fact that this script was, or, you know, was sort of written or whatever, I guess, ahead of the first movie made. Like, it's not a cash grab, but in some ways it kind of feels like a cash grab. And I think in order to make a prequel or a sequel, you either have to do some like world building or some character development or something. And this didn't really do that much world building either, because all of the locations we'd sort of been to before, most of the characters we had met previously. It's not like John Wick where they're like, oh, actually there's another continental in Rome and there's this whole thing, and actually you can get this, you know, coin and have to owe somebody a debt. You know, it's like where they're kind of adding more lore as you move on, where this didn't really do that either, other than it just added this Chris Hemsworth character in it.
Yeah,
the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, I actually didn't like this movie that much.
I know.
I'm like, I think this is sort of bad.
It shows like the politics of it a little bit, or like the, it's really, really surface level like exploration. But I do think I didn't mind the revenge story with Chris Hemsworth. I thought that was interesting, but it doesn't make sense that her immediate next choice is, okay, I'm going to go, I grew this peach tree, so now I'm going to go free these ladies. It's like, wait. I feel like I missed something. Like, what? I feel like they just wanted it to be, oh, see, she's getting her revenge. She promised her mother she'd grow this peach tree, and she's going to, and now she can go home. And I'm like, well, I have questions about the timeline, the return to the Citadel. Like, why?
How long does it take to grow a peach tree?
Bullet Town? Yeah.
Yes.
How did they? What happened to Gastown? Like, all of this stuff that I'm just like, I mean, how do you even recover from a 40-day war where all your cars are ruined? Like, it doesn't seem like there's much production happening on the vehicle side. So it honestly left more questions than answers. Whereas Fury Road, it didn't matter the like details behind the scenes, because you're just swept up immediately into the world as is.
Well, but it reminded,
introducing all this is like, it just confused me.
It reminded me a little bit of the second Quiet Place movie, in that first Quiet Place movie, it's like, okay, yeah, there is a lot of questions, but the story is so specific and so like insular that it kind of doesn't really matter what's going on in the real world, because you're like, okay, we're set on this farm and these things are attacking the people, whatever. But then the moment you sort of get out into the real world, you're like, but wait a second, like, but how did this happen, and how come to that, and how is this person around but that person isn't, and why did they get pregnant, you know, like just so many different questions. And that's kind of how I felt with this, where it was like, because the beginning of the movie, they sort of set it up as like the apocalypse had just happened recently. I think in the...
But it was 45 years is what George Miller said.
But so, yeah. In Fury Road, it sort of felt like it was a completely different universe or world. Like, these people could have been living like this for thousands of years. Like, it was sort of unclear. Where this, to me, it was like, oh, you know, like 45 years from now, this is what the world will look like. And Chris Hemsworth's character, like, kind of remembers the previous, you know, some version of like pre-apocalypse, because he talks about his like wife and kids and carries around this like doll that I guess was his kids. So it's like, it wasn't like he has memories of something better, but then it's confusing sort of in that setting of like, okay, they live in the wilderness, there's like some water somehow in this one mountain, but then we're like making bullets at another, like it kind of just the world doesn't make sense. And it's like, are these the only three? Well, like, could they go somewhere else?
Or it's like, it's like, it's basically like, okay, Australia has wasted away, but there's this one, you know, oasis, like there is in any desert. And it's like, you know, you have a water source at some point with rain or whatnot.
Right, but it's like the whole world's not it. Like, is the whole world a desert? Like, couldn't they go to the
ground's poison,
ocean or whatever?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's where maybe seeing the Mad Max origin would have helped us. But I think the implication is how quickly society crumbles, and how if our living planet turns on us, then it's like, what do? We turn into madmen. And I think in this universe, it's just all desert. Does it make sense? Like, scientifically? No. I mean, of course not. How does everyone have so much gas at any given time? You know, they're not all driving through Gas Town. But,
right. That's, you know. I guess my question is sort of like, how do we have so much gas?
You just...
And we're not...
Just roll with it.
Like, are the oceans dried up? Like, where's the water?
Well, you can't drink ocean water if you're not aware.
Yes, but you can, you know, make, you can use a still or whatever. Like, you can get the salt out of ocean water and then drink it.
Yeah, I guess, but they're stuck in the, you know, the waste.
Right, but they have cars, so theoretically they could be driving to the ocean. Like,
well, maybe there's just some questions that will like be this. The next like, sequel is he goes to the ocean resort and realizes life could be better.
Right. Yeah. No, exactly. It's like on Dune, I understand. Okay. They have no water because it's a planet with no water. If you're supposedly set in the like the current world we live, it's like, well, three quarters of the world is water. So it's like, I know it's got to be somewhere. Like, they didn't maybe get rid of it.
I don't know.
Like, I guess it's poisoned or something, but then it's not poisoned where the another thing that I would like to bring up,
okay,
a niche element of this, is there's a whole sequence where Furiosa and the other guy, or I can't, somebody or another, is driving one of the I think Jack is driving the tanker that has the food and stuff in it, and all of these people decide that they're gonna, you know, come and try to take the tanker and steal the food.
As
these like road is it Chris Hemsworth's people who are trying to steal from him?
No.
Or is it another group?
It's like a different
group. Yeah, it's a different group of roving scavengers. But then they, like, all of their methods of attack are sort of all, like, paraglidy, like, parasail, like, airplane-y kind of things, which I understand from a, oh, like, wouldn't this be a cool, like, set piece perspective? Makes a lot of sense. Like, it looks really cool to have these, you know, things flying through the air kind of trying to attack this like oil rig, but it makes absolutely no sense in practicality of the world, because it's like taking down someone connected to a large parachute is so much easier than taking down any someone in any other form. And it's
not helpful.
Because you just shoot the parachute.
It's a moving target. Like, the cars were being blown up just as easily.
Well, yeah,
I thought, like, it was, and it means they're in different places all at once. So it's not like they're all centralized on two vehicles. Suddenly, boom, in the air, boom, boom, boom. Where do you aim?
But you
I thought it was so good.
But no, you shoot the parachute. Okay, now it has a hole in it. Like, down. Like, they were so easy to take out. And I was just like, this
but they
feels like
that easy.
We're doing this for style purposes.
They almost got them. Like, they wiped out all of the
war because boys. There was a lot of people who were chasing them, and there's only so many people you can stick on an oil rig at any time.
Well, but, exactly, and there's only so many people you can stick on a
well,
a
no,
car
you can have time. You can have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of little motorcycle people coming up one by one and taking people out who are
I
on there.
I think that made total sense. You know, no. I think it was so dope.
Literally
and
zero
such
sense.
A good way to fight.
It was
I
a
mean,
fun fight
scene. In the
Fury
Road, people were flying on like the sticks, just swinging around wildly, bouncing.
Yeah,
because
I because if you're hanging off a stick and flying through the air. In order to take you out, they either have to A, hit you with a bullet, which it's like, okay, you have to have good aim, or B, I guess, like, somehow hit the stick, or, like that's how, like, those are the only options, which I feel like is hard to do. If you're attached to a giant-ass parasail, that is a giant flying target coming towards the thing. All you need to do is, like, hit it with a machine gun anywhere in there, and it rips.
I mean, yeah, but it took
it's
a
like
long
I
time
could
to
take
wake
out
them
the
out,
people
so I don't
that.
Know why you're mad about it, because they well, they tried
it
to fight
them
off, and
to
they
wake
did
them
it
out.
Sometimes. You know, they well, were like, boom, boom, boom. I mean,
it
the guys
was just,
who
it was more
were
spectacle
the, like,
than world building.
That was when I was like, oh, okay, yeah,
then,
we're back.
And
that
then
was
at the
like,
end where they're like, oh,
like,
we, no,
yeah.
It was a great, action sequence.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I enjoyed watching it.
You just
I'm
think
just
they
like,
were dumb to attempt.
Yeah, I'm like, if,
in the world, the,
right,
the rovers.
Yeah,
should have known
it's like,
better.
Yes, it's like, if I was tasked with, oh, how would I attack this? There's no way that I'd be like, ah, yes, let me like launch my hang glider, especially when you had to, when they had to sort of like get it up and running off like a moving truck. There was just so much going on to it. Yeah, it was what, you know, it's like in the John Wick movies or whatever, where they're like,
hey,
what about he's on a horse? It's like, okay, well,
if you're not like, adapting, you're dying, you know, like
that's the worst.
The rovers are like, we got to try something. They're like, I found this old fan. I think we can make it work, man. We're running
I mean,
out of gas.
It's giving, it's, but you know what? You know why you like it is because it's giving Fast and the Furious. Like, you cannot
it
tell
is
me.
Not giving
there 100%
like,
is some Fast and the Furious where they're flying a car on a hang glider. Like, I know that's.
I respect
they're
Fast
on a,
and Furious.
They're in a parachute. they're in an airplane. You know that there's a whole freaking scene in one of them with cars in parachutes. I'm like, that George Miller watched one too many Fast and the Furious movies and was like, yep, let's strap a paraglider to the top of this motorcycle. That'll really get the blood rumping.
I mean, George Miller, you know, talk about a man of many talents. Didn't he do Happy Feet?
And Babe.
And Babe. I saw an interview where he's like, yeah, Happy Feet and Mad Max have a lot of similarities. They're allegories for what we do to each other when the world becomes hard and the world, the scarcity of resources and whatnot. So honestly, we should have done our research and rewatched Happy Feet to really put this together.
I'll say this. We have the Happy Feet CD and I have listened to the Happy Feet soundtrack a lot. There's a Nicole Kidman sings a song on that. It's a Happy Feet is a bop of a movie.
Yeah.
But also
some of Robin Williams' best work.
Is Robin? Oh yeah, he's the weird like
he's the like
guru
harem
guy or whatever. Like yeah, Prince had a song on Happy Feet. I'm now looking at the Happy Feet soundtrack. I forgot that Prince had the song. Stevie Wonder had multiple songs. Which song was it that had the Nicole Kidman sang? I'm like, what was that one? Because she sang "Kiss" by Prince mixed, and then Hugh Jackman sang Heartbreak Hotel, and then they sing it together, and that's how they fall in love because of it's the song of their heart.
Oh,
and Brittany Murphy
so
is also in it singing Boogie Wonderland. I think that that the last movie that she did before she died?
I don't know. I mean, I guess so.
I think it might have
been. Yeah.
She also performed Somebody to Love.
Oh, I remember that for sure. No, yeah, George Miller's interesting, and I feel like I'm happy to see him continue to play with this world because I think it's cool. Like, it's fun. It's cool. It's fun. It's cool. I just feel like watching this and walking away having wanted something worthy of Furiosa, who's such a cool character, almost by accident. I feel like he should have maybe
They should have made a
taking
sequel.
Taking a step back. And, you know, I don't mind the prequel. I liked the bit. I liked this side plot of I don't know. I think it was darker and more depressing maybe than Fury Road just because it was so hopeless. And you kind of know everything's going to go awry no matter how she fares in this movie. I didn't mind that it was like dementis and not. I liked the element of it being a prequel. I just feel like it could have been streamlined and enriched by the feminist messaging that seemed to fuel, so to speak, Fury Road with the wives and the pregnancy and just trying to find her community again. There was so much there that I think was kind of left unexplored because it wasn't interesting to him.
I have a pitch for you. What if they did this sort of like Godfather Part 2, mm-hmm. where it technically is a sequel, the main plot of the movie is the sequel, but then we get some extended flashbacks to.
No, I hate flashbacks.
Before.
I hate a flashback. I find them very irritating most of the time.
I enjoy a flashback.
It just takes you out of it. I just think it could have been, I don't know.
I think there was a lot of room to make it more interesting. Yeah, I wanted something new, you know, like, I don't know, go to another place where there's another bad guy and they have more interesting things, you know?
I thought, I honestly thought Immortan Joe would be like healthier, like an earlier version of him, and then something would have happened that made him need the gas suit or whatever.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And like,
because we don't know why he's in that.
Yeah, the sons were funny, but then it was like the whole, oh, he's going to literally rape this child was interesting in a sad way, but it was over so fast and then he never recognized her. And even Dementis didn't recognize her. And I'm like, how many little girls with big eyes did you kidnap and hold for like at least 2 years according to her hair growth? I mean, I feel like there was room to kind of allow these relationships to have more tension than just, I watched this man kill my mother and I need to get back at him. Like, I don't know. I just, there could have been more attention.
Yeah,
She was a very watchful character. But
also, I like Anya Taylor-Joy. I think that she did a fine job in this movie with, you know, given what she had to work with, which wasn't that much. But I also think I really like Charlize Theron. I felt like she did such a good job in the first one. Mm. Like, if you make a sequel, then she can be in it. Well,
she doesn't ever want to work with them again because she had a hellish time and had no support and felt unsafe on the set. And her concerns were completely disregarded by George Miller et al. So
I think that was literally everyone on the set because.
Yeah, exactly. So it's
like you read those articles
interested.
And it was like, yeah, hellish. But I think that she is such a compelling character in the original because she is a woman and there are like certain qualities to that that make her more interesting and sort of stand out in this world of all of these like horrible male figures. And they didn't, I felt like they really didn't tap into that too much with this other than sort of like this idyllic land of women at the beginning.
Yeah. They got like too distracted or something because I think the speech Dementis gives where he's like, you and I are the same. You have to make sure like we just nothing will bring him back, but like blah, blah, blah. I think that was interesting. But since so much of her growth or whatever you want to call it in the movie was just her literally riding along, it kind of felt like, I don't know, she's only given a chance to make choices for herself when they go to Bullet Town and she decides to stay and save Jack. And that's really the only first like choice that she makes on her own.
Yeah, because it's mostly things happening to her rather than her making decisions. Okay, well, the more I talk through this, the more I feel strengthened in my convictions that this movie was sort of mid because I feel like a lot of people loved it. And then some people were tweeting that it was better than Fury Road, which I was like, you guys are on one.
Delusional.
But I'm like, yeah, okay. I think this was like, I think I gave it a 6 out of 10. And I'm like, I feel validated in that. I think that there are the opening action sequence, the action sequence with all of the paragliders, like those are both incredible, really well done. Also, I like the like bullet farm kind of fight sequence. I thought that was interesting too. Like there are some good things, but in general, not necessarily. I felt like the movie as a whole was not as cohesive, and it did not I didn't feel like it was super necessary. It was more of just like, oh, did you like Fury Road? Do you want a couple more action sequences? Here you go.
Here you go. Here's Mad Max chilling on this ledge for another 15 years straight.
Right.
Loved it. Yeah. I mean, and where was the other brother? I just feel like they chose the most random stuff to like highlight nostalgically, but like not really dig into what people actually liked about and this again is probably my audience who I've talked to this about Fury Road with, which is tends to be more female, more liberal, and so maybe less the
and then me, the male Republican film bro,
my gays, and then the bros are like, more action,
not
so they
your
don't care
gays,
as much.
I love.
But I wouldn't say this is a bad movie. I don't think it's the worst sequel or prequel that it had every possibility of being. I felt like it was a good time, and it's hilarious that it's even struggling to outpace Garfield the movie, which is a horrifically bad film, just putting that out there. Even my daughter decided to walk out on that one, so so I wish the best for this franchise. I think he proves himself again and again to be a really interesting action director.
Oh, but only $64 million so far, which is
it was a disappointing weekend.
I mean, this is coming off of this is another story,
it's been
but
a dead
like
summer.
There's been a lot of weak stuff so far. If the like weird Ryan Reynolds movie did poorly, I guess I don't know how the like Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes did, but the Fall Guy didn't do well. I thought we were doing like really good there for a second with like Challengers and Civil War and the Anne Hathaway movie, but I feel like the bigger budget things are not doing as well, which brings us to next week. We have some fun options on the table. There is something called Young Woman in the Sea. There's a movie called Ezra. There's something called the Great Lillian Hall. There's at least four movies that don't even have Wikipedia pages. So we've really got some strong contenders in the mix for things that we could talk about.
Gorgeous. Love that.
I guess we could watch the Jennifer Lopez Netflix movie that's already out. Yeah. Seemed bad.
That's rough. That's
why is
that's
nothing coming out
poorly
this weekend?
Reviewed. Yeah,
I'm like, I've never heard of any of these. What is summer camp? Oh, Diane Keaton.
Oh no, that looked so bad. That looked so bad. Anyways, we'll figure something out.
Yeah, I am excited for the movie by M. Night Shyamalan's daughter.
So excited for Twisters. That's my next.
Oh, well, yes, Twisters. Yeah, but that doesn't come out until July, I don't think.
I know.
We got a long time before
I
Twisters.
Know, but I was like, in Furiosa, I was like, man, I can't wait for Twisters.
I'm really excited for Kinds of Kindness. That's the movie that I'm excited for. The Yorgos Lanthimos one that...
of course.
That also has Emma Stone in it. Yeah, you're like, no, thank you. I don't want to watch this. But luckily, there is one thing that we can agree on, which is that we're both very excited to watch Harold and the Purple Crayon later this
starring
summer.
Starring Zachary Levi.
Starring Zachary
Levi.
Child
star.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Zoe Deschanel. Let's not...
cute. Perfect.
Let's not count her out. So...
I guess we could do our mid-year roundup next week, but it's kind of early.
Yeah, usually we wait until July to do that. Although looking at the June, looking at the June lineup of movies, I'm like, is there anything in this that's going to crack my top 10? Russell Crowe and The Exorcism. Do we think that'll be a big winner? Oh, Horizon and American Saga Chapter 1, the Kevin Costner self-funded Western. I'm sure that'll be exciting. Thank you. Although you have a family affair coming out with Nicole Kidman and Zac Efron at the end of June, so I'm sure that'll make it into your top 10.
I guess I don't think so, but maybe.
You love a Zac Efron movie.
I love Zac Efron. I know.
Okay, well, I guess we will be scouring for have you been watching Hacks? Do you watch Hacks?
I have watched Hacks. I haven't started this season though,
because this season is really good, and I think the finale is this week, so we could theoretically do an episode on Hacks.
I could burn through that probably pretty
it's
easily.
Pretty quick. I think it's good. I have been watching. Is Taylor Swift gonna, she could surprise drop something, an album, a baby, a book, her movies coming out? We could start a conspiracy theory going that she is actually the writer director for Protocol 7, the movie listed here that doesn't have a Wikipedia page that comes out this weekend.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, let's start that. Definitely. I've heard that. 100%.
Maybe director, screenplay writer Andrew Wakefield is actually Taylor Swift somehow
Wakefield.
Or another.
Andrew.
How
Drew
many letters?
Looks at me. Teardrops on my guitar. First album. 7 times 7 plus 7 is 14. -1 is 13. So. There.
7 plus 6 is okay. Anyways, TBD exactly what we'll be doing next week, but we'll figure that out and we'll be back. Go see Furiosa if you want to, because it does need money, but also it's a mid film, I would say. Thanks for listening. Bye.